You are listening to part two of chapter six, Herbs and Medications, in the book Depression, The Way Out by Dr. Neil Nedley. Drug Medications for Depression. Depression is more than a dark and frightening disorder. It can be life-threatening. Therefore, anyone with moderate to severe depression requires vigorous treatment without delay. Traditional aggressive treatments include antidepressant drugs and specific short-term psychological counseling. Those who fail to respond to such interventions are sometimes prescribed radical treatments, like electroconvulsive therapy. By the time you finish this chapter, you'll see that I recommend a radically different approach. There are many different antidepressant medications. Most, when properly prescribed, afford effective depression treatment for approximately 70% of patients. Improvements typically take place over weeks, not days. Many patients, unfortunately, make the high-risk mistake of discontinuing these drugs when they don't experience immediate improvements or encounter unpleasant side effects. These same antidepressants can also help treat panic disorder, other anxiety disorders, eating disorders, and attention deficit disorder. Some even decrease physical pain. Frustrated smokers can also reap benefits from newer antidepressants, increasing smoking cessation success rates. Helping such a range of unrelated conditions testifies to the amazing nature of antidepressant drugs. They work on human biochemical systems that have broad health-giving properties. How do antidepressants work? Before I answer this question, let's briefly review some relevant aspects of brain science. Brain cells called neurons communicate with one another by sending chemicals called neurotransmitters across a critical space between cells known as the synapses. Depression has been linked to a shortage of any one of four different neurotransmitters: serotonin, norepinephrine, dopamine, or epinephrine. Neurotransmitter shortages can occur due to decreased supply or insufficient production or improper release of neurotransmitters, impaired receptors on the receiving neurons, either too few receptors, or receptors that are not functioning properly. Accelerated destruction or reabsorption of the neurotransmitters themselves can also result in effectual shortage. In any of these scenarios, the mechanism for transmitting brain messages is impaired, and depressed brain function results. Regardless of the cause of the problem, increasing neurotransmitter levels can address the shortage and improve the depression. Antidepressants correct the shortage of neurotransmitters. Antidepressants are designed to correct neurotransmitter shortages by increasing the body's supply of one or more of these important brain chemicals. The information that follows explains how different classes of medications address these deficiencies differently. Three main classes of antidepressant drugs. Antidepressant medication classifications are based on chemical structure as well as how the various drugs affect the brain. The three main classes of synthetic antidepressants are tricyclic antidepressants, monoamine oxidase inhibitors, and selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Each of these three classes deserves closer examination. Tricyclic antidepressants. Tricyclic antidepressants increase the brain's norepinephrine levels. Tofranil, disipramine, doxepin, and Elavil are common brand names of drugs in this class. Generic names include imipramine and amitriptyline. These drugs have a number of side effects, such as weight gain, blurred vision, constipation, fast or regular heartbeat, bladder weakness, tremors, dizziness, sleepiness, and dry mouth. Dry mouth and sleepiness occur in most individuals at the outset of the therapy. This is one reason I recommend taking these medications before bedtime. More grimly, idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, a scarring or thickening of the deep lung tissue, strikes TCA users 2 to 5 times more frequently than non-users. This incurable lung disease manifests with a dry cough and breathlessness. Imipramine is associated with the highest 5-fold risk. Those who smoke marijuana while taking TCAs often develop a racing heartbeat, inability to reason, and delirium. From the 1960s through the 1980s, tricyclic antidepressants were the first-line pharmacological treatment for major depression in the U.S. Today, however, TCAs are generally employed as second- or third-line therapies when newer antidepressants like selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors don't work. Tricyclics have fallen out of favor for two reasons. First, although equivalent to SSRIs in short-term effectiveness, TCAs carry more side effects. Second, an overdose of tricyclics can be lethal. Because of this possibility, these drugs should not be dispensed in large quantities to suicidal patients. Nonetheless, when severely ill patients, like those in our acute care hospitals, become depressed, tricyclic antidepressants may be more effective than SSRIs. Compared to the other two main antidepressant classes, TCAs have other advantages. These drugs can help treat pain syndromes such as peripheral neuropathy in diabetics. Furthermore, the tricyclic drug, nortriptyline, is an effective smoking cessation aid. Patients may respond favorably to tricyclics within the first week, but significant improvement in chronic depression may require 6 or more weeks. Regardless of the drugs used, patients treated for their first depressive episode may be able to taper off and completely discontinue their medication after 4 to 9 months of full remission. However, compared to newer antidepressants, TCAs are generally more difficult to wean patients from because of increased withdrawal symptoms. Monoamine oxidase inhibitors. An enzyme called monoamine oxidase, MAO, breaks down three important neurotransmitters, norepinephrine, dopamine, and serotonin. Drugs that block this enzyme, called monoamine oxidase inhibitors, MAOI, thus raise brain levels of these compounds and help combat depression. Parnate, Nardil, and Marplan are currently available drugs in the MAOI class. MAOIs have been largely replaced by SSRIs, although many patients with major depression who do not respond to TCAs improve with MAOIs. Depressed patients with specific symptoms, like sleeping too much, overeating for long periods of time, rejection sensitivity, and panic attacks, may get the best result with MAOIs. MAOIs are also effective treatment for panic disorder and bipolar depression. Unfortunately, organs beside the brain use the MAO enzyme to accomplish other functions. In the liver, MAO helps deactivate a class of dietary compounds called pressor amines. Therefore, when monoamine oxidase-blocking drugs are ingested for depression, the liver's MAO enzymes are also shut down. In this setting, if pressor amines, such as triamine, are ingested, they pass into the bloodstream and exert their full toxicity. This is no small matter. Pressor amines can cause intense throbbing headaches, elevated body temperature, blood pressure elevation, rapid heartbeat, seizures, strokes, coma, and even death. Therefore, when taking an MAOI, shun all substances which contain pressor amines. Some important foods and beverages to avoid include cheese, sauerkraut, yeast supplements, fava beans, alcoholic beverages, especially beer and wine, even alcohol-free or reduced alcohol varieties, as well as any other fermented or spoiled foods. Patients using MAOIs and their immediate family members should be thoroughly aware of all foods and medications that can trigger the life-threatening side effects I've described. A careful reading of the drug package insert will provide the entire list of offending agents. One final warning: never mix an MAOI with an SSRI. Serotonin toxicity can occur, leading to hyperactivity of the central nervous system, delirium, seizures, and even death. An overview of direct MAOI side effects, apart from dietary amine or SSRI interactions, are tremors, edema, dizziness, constipation, sleepiness, dry mouth, blurred vision, weight gain, sexual dysfunction, increased blood pressure, and fast or irregular heartbeat. Selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs. Selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors are the newest of the three main classes of antidepressants. They prevent the reabsorption of serotonin from the synapses, where the neighboring brain cells communicate. This allows increased serotonin stimulation. SSRIs also affect a newly discovered brain pathway where chemicals called neurosteroids help control anxiety and depression. The SSRI class includes the popular drug Prozac, with 1999 sales of about $1.5 billion, and Zoloft, a nearly $1 billion seller, also quickly gaining widespread use are Paxil, Celexa, and Lexapro. A once-a-week formulation of Prozac is designed for patients whose depression symptoms have stabilized but require continuing treatment for relapse prevention. SSRIs tend to be the current antidepressant of choice because of their limited side effects, although they may cause insomnia, agitation, headache, nausea, and diarrhea. They also are far less dangerous when taken as an overdose than the tricyclic antidepressants. An added bonus, unlike tricyclic antidepressants, the SSRIs are not likely to cause weight gain. SSRIs are also effective in treating obsessive-compulsive disorder, some types of anxiety, and panic disorder. Conversely, a British study showed that those on SSRIs are more likely to attempt suicide than those on tricyclics, though if they choose to overdose, SSRIs are less toxic. The majority will try a means other than overdose, since only 17% of studied suicide attempts try an overdose of their antidepressants. However, there are serious side effects and interactions to be aware of, making it imperative that you keep your doctor informed of every medication you take. It is important not to combine SSRIs with any other type of serotonin agent like MAOIs, as serotonin toxicity can occur. Combining most SSRIs with other types of drugs can enhance their levels and effects to a dangerous point. As in the case of virtually all antidepressants, SSRIs may precipitate mania in people with a susceptibility for bipolar disorder. A recent study warns of a threefold increased risk of upper GI bleeding when taking an SSRI. When used in addition to anti-inflammatory medications, which are often used as painkillers, the risk increases even more. Even more seriously, the UK Medicines Control Agency has called for a suicide warning to be added to informational materials given to patients taking these medicines. Studies reported that, especially during the early stages of treatment, thoughts of suicide and suicidal behavior increase. This is not due to a worsening of the depression, but rather due to an increase in impulsiveness, another side effect of SSRIs. Another worrisome mental side effect that can occur when taking an SSRI is an "I don't care" attitude. This effect can be common even when a person should genuinely care. I have patients taking SSRIs who stated that they could not cry at a loved one's funeral since they did not feel a sense of deep sadness over the loss. Yet another mental side effect, vivid strange dreams, can occur in those taking SSRIs. Two other common adverse actions of this class of antidepressant have been the focus of considerable clinical and research interest: sexual dysfunction and withdrawal syndromes. Although depression itself can lower libido, sex drive, and impair sexual performance, it has been clearly established that SSRIs can cause sexual dysfunction in both men and women, independent of their therapeutic activity. The most common problems, which can affect more than half of adults taking SSRIs, are absent or delayed orgasm in women and delayed or reversed ejaculation in men. Although I prescribe all of the SSRIs, I generally favor Lexapro or Celexa. Since I have found less side effects with their use, they do not interact with most prescription drugs, and they are at least equally effective as other SSRIs. I tend to use Paxil or Paxil CR for patients who have significant anxiety associated with their depression. Wellbutrin for major depression. Wellbutrin, also known as bupropion, is structurally related to amphetamine and has been shown to be effective for the treatment of major depression. It blocks the reuptake of dopamine and norepinephrine and is considered appropriate in the event that an SSRI is ineffective or cannot be tolerated. Unlike some antidepressants, it does not cause sedation and may increase the ability to stay alert. It can also help the success rate in people who have chosen to quit smoking. The Zyban form of bupropion is specifically marketed to smokers because of this effect. Bupropion is also effective in treating adults and children with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Bupropion should not be used for patients with anorexia nervosa or bulimia, or for those with an increased risk of seizure. Other than its incompatibility with MAOs, it does not have significant drug interactions. Another advantage is that it is not associated with sexual dysfunction, a notable distinction from the adverse profile of the SSRIs and the tricyclics. Some patients tell me it actually increases their libido and sexual performance. Also, unlike the tricyclics and SSRIs, bupropion is more commonly associated with weight loss than weight gain. Side effects are common in high doses and include agitation, restlessness, insomnia, and anxiety. Another possible side effect is that the patient's blood pressure may drop upon standing up, which can be associated with standing lightheadedness or dizziness. I found that these side effects become less common when I prescribe a low dose at first, 100 mg twice a day, and increase the dose on the fourth day to 100 mg three times a day. After 2 to 4 weeks, I may increase the dose to 150 mg three times a day if needed. Other antidepressants. Another drug in a new class of antidepressants is reboxetine. It is a selective noradrenaline reuptake inhibitor, SNRI. In two studies released by the American Psychiatric Association, patients had a greater reduction in symptoms than those on SSRIs, but had more side effects, resulting in more of them quitting the medication. Another SNRI, venlafaxine, also known as Effexor, appears to be equally effective as the tricyclic antidepressants, but with less side effects. I have found venlafaxine to generally have more side effects than SSRIs. The newer SNRIs are duloxetine, Cymbalta, which is particularly difficult to withdraw from, and desvenlafaxine, Prisk, which is similar to, but with less sedation, dry mouth, and sexual dysfunction than venlafaxine. Trazodone, also known as Desiral, which inhibits serotonin reuptake, also stimulates the action of serotonin itself through a byproduct produced by the liver during trazodone metabolization. It causes significant sedation, however, and is generally taken at bedtime. It can also cause nausea and a drop in blood pressure when standing. In 1 out of every 6,000 men, it can cause an abnormally prolonged and painful erection that can even threaten the blood supply to the penis. Efforts to improve the side effect profile of trazodone led to the development of nafazodone, also known as Serzone. Nafazodone also inhibits serotonin reuptake, but in addition blocks a cousin to a serotonin receptor in the brain called the 5-hydroxytryptamine 2 receptor. It causes less sedation than trazodone and has less risk of painful erections in men. However, it can be very toxic to the liver. Mirtazapine, Remeron, enhances both norepinephrine and serotonin neurotransmission. How it accomplishes this is quite unique. It blocks a distinctive receptor called the presynaptic A2 adrenergic autoreceptor, which increases the release of norepinephrine. This increase in norepinephrine release stimulates serotonin to also be released. Since this mechanism is unique, the side effect profile of mirtazapine is also unique. The most frequently reported side effect of mirtazapine is sleepiness, experienced by more than 50% of patients. The other major adverse effect of mirtazapine is increased appetite and considerable weight gain. Fortunately, side effects characteristic of the SSRIs, including nausea, diarrhea, and sexual dysfunction, are infrequent with the use of mirtazapine. I use mirtazapine, Remeron, for those who suffer from insomnia, anorexia, and dose it at bedtime once daily. I have compiled on pages 112 and 13 of this book a comparison of the cost, dosages, side effects, and my personal clinical experiences with many antidepressants available today. Treatment-resistant depression. With all the choices for medicinal treatment, 30% of patients with major depression in standard medical or psychiatric practices do not improve at all with the initial medication. What do we do when the treatment does not work? The usual treatment regimen is 4 to 6 weeks, and if there is no improvement, another drug may be tried, and a thorough reevaluation of the potential causes of depression should be identified. Unfortunately, at this point, most practitioners just try another drug, or perhaps refer the patient for counseling if this has not already been done. They are often completely unaware of the wonderful nutritional and lifestyle therapies available for depression, and thus do not utilize them. In my practice, less than 15% of my depressed patients do not respond to the initial treatment regimen. The regimen includes changes in their eating and lifestyle habits, as well as medication for those with at least moderate depression. Many of those who did not respond did not change their lifestyle and only took the medication. For the very few who did follow the treatment regimen but did not improve, I searched for a cause of depression that we may have overlooked during the initial evaluation. I might search for uncommon causes such as vitamin B12 deficiency, an unusual infectious cause, or mercury poisoning. If no other causes are identified and the nutrition and lifestyle therapies appear to be appropriate for the patient, I often try a different drug class. Another option would be to maximize the dose of the current antidepressant or use another drug in the same class, since it is not uncommon for another drug within the same classification to work. It's a sad fact that there is actually no research that shows a logical way to choose the type of medication that will work best. In situations where a drug has been partially but not completely effective during the initial trial time, it may be appropriate to supplement the treatment with another drug such as lithium or bupropion. This can be better than trying a different antidepressant drug, since improvement may be more rapid than tapering off one drug and starting another. Lithium has proven effective in carefully performed scientific studies and clinical practice. Normal dosages range from 600 to 800 milligrams a day. The chances of remaining depressed after starting lithium are reduced by 56 to 96%. The adverse effects of lithium with antidepressants are benign, but tend to be seen more in the elderly. Despite its effectiveness, lithium augmentation has become less popular over time, probably since blood levels must be regularly monitored for lithium concentrations to prevent serious toxic effects. Bupropion, Wellbutrin, which we examined earlier, is another alternative supplement to SSRI medications. As well as enhancing the effect of the SSRI, it can reduce the side effects of sexual dysfunction and apathy that an SSRI may produce. When used in conjunction with an SSRI, blood levels of bupropion should be monitored to prevent toxicity in the patient. Shock treatments as a last resort. Finally, shock treatments are typically the last resort treatment for patients facing serious incapacitation. Unfortunately, this approach generally causes some degree of permanent memory loss. Some professionals feel that it is now safe enough to be used as an early treatment instead of a last-ditch effort. I've only utilized it as a last resort measure, having only referred one case in the last 20 years. Since I started using the specific nutrition and lifestyle therapies presented in Chapter 4, 5, and 9, I've not had to refer any cases for shock treatments. Chapter 9 provides further details on shock therapy. The next part of this chapter deals with certain groups of patients who require specialized treatment. Treatment of depression occurring with another illness. When I diagnose a patient with depression, I must carefully evaluate whether the treatment may be complicated by the presence of another mental or physical disorder. Treatment of the primary condition is always the most important focus, but whenever there is a full depressive condition, treatment to help alleviate the depressive symptoms must be considered. It is important to accurately assess the type and timing of multiple treatments, with care taken to avoid interactions among them. Treating multiple mental disorders can result in increased use of mental health services. However, patients with multiple mental illnesses who stick to their antidepressant medications usually end up with lower healthcare costs termed as medical offset effect. In some cases, the primary consideration in treating depression and another disease simultaneously is the reaction of the body to the drugs. For example, patients with kidney or liver disease often have an accompanying depression. Close attention must be given to the ability of the diseased organ to handle the antidepressant or mood-stabilizing drugs. Diseased livers and kidneys may be unable to process certain antidepressants, causing accumulations of the drugs or elimination for the body without metabolization. Treatment of underlying medical conditions with antibiotics or steroids may trigger prominent mental disturbances and complicate their treatment because of interactions of the antidepressant with the other medication. Treatment during pregnancy and postpartum period. Anytime a woman is pregnant, she should take extra care in deciding what she will take into her digestive system. This is doubly true when using medications, whether they are herbal or prescription. She and her physician should seek to avoid all unnecessary medication during pregnancy. In the case of depression, a pregnant woman should first try counseling, nutrition, and lifestyle therapy. Only if that fails should medication be used, but with great caution. Often women with a history of major depression stop their medication when they become pregnant, only to have the depression return. Half will restart their medication during the pregnancy because of the returning symptoms. It is not ethically possible to do randomized medication studies on pregnant women and their fetuses. Most of the data gathered on the subject is from experience. These occurrences suggest that antidepressant medications are relatively safe for pregnant women and their developing fetuses. The potential benefit and risks of all available treatment options during and after the pregnancy must be reviewed for each woman on an individual basis. If an expecting mother requires antidepressants, SSRIs appear to be the safest for the fetus, and the tricyclic nortriptyline and dispramine cause fewer adverse effects than the other tricyclics. However, blood plasma levels should be monitored each trimester. MAOI should be totally avoided. Most importantly, use the lowest possible effective dose of every medication. Depression can also be an issue for the mother after the birth of the baby. Although the blues are common after childbirth, true postpartum depression is a serious mental disorder that requires active intervention. In one controlled trial, cognitive behavioral therapy was found to be equally effective as limited medication in treating postpartum depression. Treatment of depression in the elderly. With the mean age of the U.S. population steadily increasing, geriatric depression is also increasing, which requires unique attention and treatment. As we grow older, many new and different stresses come into our lives. Loss of loved ones and disruption of familiar situations increase, thereby escalating the chances of depressive symptoms. Depression need not be feared or a cause for embarrassment. Modern treatment of geriatric depression is safe and effective. With available medicines and cognitive behavioral therapy, at least 70 to 80% of older patients with uncomplicated recurrent depression respond to continued treatment. Let us review the method of treatment for older victims of depression. Overall, response rates to SSRIs in geriatric patients appear to be lower than those treated with tricyclic antidepressants. However, the milder side effects of SSRIs often provide an enhanced quality of life during treatment. The unique stress and losses of an older person are often seen as the cause of minor depressive symptoms, but when full-scale depression ensues, treatment is required and is often successful. In one study, the combination of nortriptyline and behavioral therapy produced a 69% remission rate in older adults with bereavement-related major depression. In the senior age group, there is considerable frequency, disability, and even risk of death associated with episodes of depression. As with younger patients, seniors should be maintained on treatment for at least 4 to 9 months. Standard long-term drug treatments relieve symptoms as well in the elderly as they do in middle-aged adults. Complicated cases of geriatric depression are much harder to treat. Depression caused by a reduced blood supply to certain areas of the brain resists treatment with antidepressants alone and may require more aggressive treatment. Once again, shock treatments are considered a potentially life-saving intervention for the geriatric population, with results that decrease the incidence of death in those with severe major depression. Antidepressant use in the elderly nursing home residents has been associated with increases in falls and hip fractures in several case studies. Surprisingly, SSRIs that tend to have fewer side effects were not consistently better than tricyclic antidepressants in preventing these complications. The impact of the newer antidepressants on these high-risk adverse effects is as yet unknown. Depression in children. The 1990s witnessed an increased use of antidepressant medications, singly and in combination, in routine clinical practice dealing with children and adolescents. During the same time period, SSRIs replaced the tricyclics as drugs of choice for the treatment of major depression in the young as well as the adult patients. More than 1 million prescriptions for these compounds were written annually for young patients, ranking second only to stimulants among brain-affecting drugs prescribed. Data from controlled trials supports the effectiveness of other SSRIs, including fluoxetine, sertraline, and paroxetine, in depressed children and adolescents. One study showed that 40% of the children and adolescents who improved with SSRIs had experienced a major recurrence of their depression in just 1 year. This again underscores the importance of finding the real causes of the depression in children and focusing on nutritional and lifestyle changes that can improve their condition long term. Antidepressant withdrawal. Once the causes of the depression have been found, the appropriate nutrition, social, and lifestyle changes should be implemented. Placing the depressed individual on medication buys time for these changes to be fully incorporated into the lifestyle. The changes are made step by step, as I describe in detail in Chapter 10. Once all of the recommendations are put into practice, I usually have the patient wait another 4 weeks before withdrawing from the medication. This not only provides greater assurance that the new lifestyle is enduring, but also gives time for those changes to positively affect the brain. By the time the withdrawal process begins, the patient has usually been taking the medicine for 4 to 6 months. For individuals who have had difficulty implementing the lifestyle, up to a year has transpired. Fortunately, withdrawing from most antidepressants is much safer and less difficult than withdrawing from the anti-anxiety medicines. The cravings associated with withdrawal from narcotics, amphetamines, alcohol, or nicotine are not present when stopping SSRIs and tricyclics. Withdrawal symptoms are more likely with higher doses and greater lengths of treatment. Unfortunately, some patients make a decision to abruptly stop their medication without consulting their physician. This usually happens when unwanted side effects are no longer acceptable to the individual. It can also happen when serious side effects occur, another illness develops, such as a heart attack or heart rhythm disturbance, the individual becomes pregnant, or another medication is prescribed that interacts with the existing medication. If the medication has not been effective after a month of use, the patient is often tempted to stop the drug cold turkey. There are now many reports of withdrawal symptoms, often referred to in the medical literature as discontinuation reactions, with tricyclics, SSRIs, and other antidepressants, such as Effexor. Withdrawal symptoms will occur in 30 to 50% of patients suddenly stopping high doses of tricyclic antidepressants. Some SSRIs are more likely to produce withdrawal symptoms than others. A well-designed study involving 242 patients was interrupted for 5 to 8 days by placebo substitution to mimic abruptly stopping the SSRIs. The patient and the physician were blinded, meaning they did not know if or when the placebo would be introduced. Withdrawal symptoms occurred within 24 to 72 hours and were most likely with Paxil, 66%, followed by Zoloft, 60%. Only 14% of those taking Prozac experienced withdrawal symptoms. Since Prozac and its active byproduct produced by the liver last for weeks, 8-day drug stoppage may not produce withdrawal symptoms. However, a month after discontinuation of Prozac, the likelihood of withdrawal symptoms occurring may be higher. The happiest reason for discontinuing antidepressant medications is due to the depression being cured through nutrition and lifestyle, and thus it is no longer necessary. In such cases, I rarely abruptly discontinue the antidepressant medication. I first gradually decrease the dosage to the lowest dose that can still be effective, a process that typically takes about 2 weeks. I then recommend that the patient skip a dose every other day, and finally have the patient take the lowest dose of medicine just twice a week before discontinuing the medicine altogether. The entire process from the time weaning begins until the medication is stopped usually takes about 5 weeks, although there is a lot of variation from patient to patient. The higher the dose the patient is taking, the longer the weaning process. The greater the intensity or number of very troublesome withdrawal symptoms, the slower the process. If the patient has truly incorporated the recommended lifestyle and follows the recommended weaning process, withdrawal symptoms are infrequent. In fact, I have found that most of these patients actually feel better after the medicine is finally stopped, since they are no longer experiencing the mental and physical side effects. If withdrawal symptoms do occur, they usually begin within 48 hours of decreasing or stopping the medicine. Once the medicine is stopped, the withdrawal symptoms will typically disappear within 2 weeks, although some have reported withdrawal symptoms for up to a month. A list of the possible withdrawal symptoms from SSRIs are abdominal pain, heart palpitations, anxiety, diarrhea, disorientation, apathy, dry mouth, dizziness, aggression, increased appetite, nervousness, impulsiveness, nausea, vomiting, impaired vision, loss of balance, shakiness, chest pain, buzzing in the head, confusion, chills, tinnitus or ringing in the ears, hallucinations, headaches, vivid dreams, panic, fatigue, insomnia, a return of the depression, or tingling or shock sensation of the limbs. A list of possible symptoms from tricyclic antidepressant withdrawal are abdominal pain and headache, various sleep disorders, diarrhea, sweating, anxiety, anorexia, heart palpitations, depression returning, vomiting, dizziness, panic, chills, tremor, fatigue, and impaired mental faculties. Withdrawal from MAOIs is not as easy as withdrawing from SSRIs or tricyclic antidepressants. In fact, the difficulty of stopping MAOIs has been likened to discontinuing opiates or amphetamines. It can be achieved, but not without some withdrawal symptoms occurring, and sometimes those symptoms can be severe. This is one important reason why I rarely prescribe MAOIs. The most common MAOI withdrawal symptoms are headache, anxiety, shivering, psychosis, muscle weakness, delirium, hallucinations, and tingling or burning of the skin. Withdrawal symptoms, occasionally severe, have also been reported after stopping Effexor. These symptoms include headache, dizziness, nausea, diarrhea, and shock-like sensations. Some antidepressants, such as Wellbutrin, do not seem to be associated with adverse symptoms when the drug is abruptly stopped. The goal is to use medication as a temporary measure until more permanent lifestyle-correcting measures are employed to cure the disease. Limitations of medications. A study surveying 1,001 patients taking antidepressants showed that 25% of them felt that the medication had not affected their lives in a positive way. About 47% reported side effects, and 55% of those who had side effects stopped taking the medicine, while another 17% skipped doses. Another survey of nearly 1,400 different patients on long-term antidepressant drug therapy showed that almost two-thirds were not very satisfied with their treatment. This does not mean they did not improve with medicine, but that they did not improve as much as they had desired. Between 70 and 80% who were taking antidepressants said depression continued to impair their social life and their work performance, as well as affect family life. Sadly, medication is not a cure-all for depression. Yes, about 70% of patients will experience some improvement in their mood and other symptoms, with a minority experiencing an apparent cure of their condition while taking the medicine. Unfortunately, unless the causes are addressed and the lifestyle changed for the better, Either depression will not be treated in a completely satisfactory manner or relapse into depression will likely occur. Try non-medication approaches first. Over the past 25 years, the number of people disabled by mental illness has soared in societies that have embraced the use of antidepressants, according to Robert Whitaker at the American College of Lifestyle Medicine meeting in Washington, D.C. of October 2013. Major depression has a better chance of resolving 1 year later when medications are not used than when medicines are used to treat depression. Evidence indicates that when medicines are used to treat depression, depression scores are better at 2 to 4 months after medication is initiated, but worse at 12 months out and later, even when antidepressant medications are still being taken. According to Dr. Rif El-Malik from the University of Louisville, continued drug treatment may induce processes that are the opposite of what the antidepressant medication originally produced. This may, quote, cause a worsening of the illness, continue for a period of time after discontinuation of the medicine, and may not be reversible. Antidepressant drugs and depression might be beneficial in the short term, but worsen the progression of the disease in the long term by increasing the biochemical vulnerability to depression. Use of antidepressant drugs may propel the illness to a more malignant and treatment-unresponsive course, unquote, according to Dr. Fava. As a result of this accumulating evidence, I strongly recommend that anyone with a first episode of depression look for the many non-drug approaches outlined in this book and in my DVD workbook series before considering filling and taking prescription medications for depression. In conclusion, in this chapter, I presented much information on medications that needs to be put into perspective. Remember, despite their effectiveness, drug medications have many potential side effects, including some extremely serious ones. If you've ever received the information sheet that comes with a medication, you see that often the side effect list can nearly fill the whole page of fine print. It's easy to fall into the trap of thinking that taking a pill is the way out. While a medication may take away symptoms of a disease, in this case, depression, it does not cure the problem and often creates a whole new array of side effects. It is important to discover the root of the problem and treat it in a way that can bring lasting relief. However, medications do have their place if they are not used as an ultimate solution. They should be reserved for moderate to severe depression, and a definite goal should be a discontinuation within 6 months and no more than a year in most cases. When you study the relapse rate of patients who use antidepressant medications, it is not an encouraging picture. Those who discontinue usage after 3 months had a 77% relapse rate within the next 2 years. Another study found 40% relapsed within a year. Even those who continue medication have a relapse rate of 20 to 40%. No matter how bleak these facts may sound, I want to leave you with good news. If you and your doctor take an approach that follows the standards outlined in this chapter and the lifestyle standards outlined in the rest of the book, the relapse rate for subsequent episodes of depression decreases to about 10%. Therein lies the key. Putting the body back into the balance God originally outlined with proper diet and lifestyle choices, including study of His Word and trusting in His leading.
You've been listening to Depression the Way Out by Dr. Neil Nedley. Copyright 2014. To purchase this or other books by Dr. Nedley, or to learn more about their 10-day residential or their 8-week community programs, visit www.nedleyhealthsolutions.com.